Welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Summer solstice is a moment of continuity in a never-ending cycle. The solstice is also a moment of reversal. Both these things are true, a continue and a reversal. In any complex cycle, there's not just one direction, but a combination of things that still have repetition on a larger scale as a defining characteristic. Like us, so we are still in the midst of our ongoing evolution, but we're in a peak moment, a moment of maximum sunlight. It lends itself to metaphors. I'm sure you've seen some on Instagram. But it's important to remember that while we can isolate the peak as a, quote, special or even, quote, wonderful occurrence, it's the cycle that better describes our reality. Enjoying the peak as part of the cycle, part of the whole, lets us be engaged and have human reactions, like being happy, like if you're in Sweden and it's midsummer. But being conscientious of the whole then also lets us have a perspective above and beyond that mundane sort of pleasure principle driven mode that makes us happy and then sad and then happy and then sad and mostly feeling out of control. The summer solstice and its counterpart, the winter solstice, demonstrate the nature of our world as comprising opposites. That is the nature of nature. Often, as with the path of our planets, the opposites appear gradually or they appear cyclically. We sometimes think of that as like long-term trends. One trend until 2016 was for normal U.S. citizens to pay less attention to politics. Statements that I heard back in 2016, like, they're all the same, they seem true. And people threw up their hands. They minimally participated in what seemed to be a kind of great inertia that kept bringing us better stuff, better phones, TVs with high resolution, ride sharing, delivery apps, easy travel all over the world. But because of socioeconomic forces, especially we ignore those that are in far away places, right, where people were so unhappy, so put upon, that they felt driven to leave their homes, to leave their everything they know behind. Nobody but a sliver at the top were really very happy with things. And for this and a variety of reasons, we hit a political solstice. We turned from what had been growing for decades and have started heading towards something else. Some people who didn't like what had been going on put their trust in the odd solution that started the turn, this right-wing rise that is prevalent in America and Europe too. Others, many who were just as unhappy with things, but aren't happy with what we installed to change the circumstances, have been scrambling to get involved. Ooh, is that a difference? From none of them matters and nothing matters and let's just get out of this to let's get involved, we must be involved, everybody must be doing something, right? People have reached a level of personal anxiety or personal discomfort. But the cycle, even though it looks like it's different, is just continuing. And now we have a potential for another political solstice. So while the planetary orbits that, you know, our solar solstice is dealing with, and our planets tilt, like summer, winter, they follow a pattern that has equal durations to each part of the pattern. The realm of politics has a much more wobbly cycle. And it's yet to be seen whether the swings from Republican to Democrat to Republican, etc., keeps a two-term rhythm in the presidency, or it has a wobble this November that turns things around again. Part of this segment of the political cycle relates a little more directly to my usual podcast themes. It's that Marianne Williamson is a candidate. No one with any political experience gives her a chance in hell to get the nomination, and I count myself among those, but I've been intrigued by her presence. I don't mean this as an endorsement for her. I don't know actually who I want to have as the nominee yet. But to me, she's interesting in relation to the cycle I'm discussing. She represents the truest opposite to where we're heading. Normally, when we think conservative, we call progressive the opposite. When we think diverse, we think monoculture as the opposite. When we think old, we think of young as the opposite. When we think rich, poor, we think equalize as the opposite. And when we think power struggle, we think conquer as the opposite. Many candidates that we see floating around on TV, on podcasts, on the news, and will be floating around in a debate this week are holding these positions. But when asked in a political interview about how she would tackle Trump, Williamson described where we're heading and what she would do instead, using something she's very, very well versed in. It's a philosophical position. A truth with a capital T, which is, the opposite of fear is love. I will tackle him through love. She didn't share the source of this language, as she's trying to avoid being called the spiritual teacher out on the stump. She's trying to, you know, be presidential material. But I'll share the source of this material. It's the Course in Miracles. Right? The Course in Miracles says, the opposite of love is fear. But what is all-encompassing can have no opposite. Love is like a light where fear is the darkness. The dark, it has no substance. It's only the lack of light. So the way to deal with fear is through its opposite. And that brings us to truth. I've been pondering having this philosopher in the presidential race and how different her presentation and language are compared to the other candidates. And I immediately thought about Plato's Republic and his notion of the philosopher king. Right? And, you know, when he described the idea, he actually ruffled feathers by making it not just a king. He said that women as well as men could serve in this role. So it was philosopher king or philosopher queen, more accurately. And while Plato's idea has historically served as justification by many unwise rulers, right, and served as rationale for the kind of an elite governing class, right? So it's been sort of twisted. There is something interesting here, and that's kind of where I'd like to ponder a moment. Plato implied, and though I read Plato in college, I wasn't very into anything of any depth in college, and I haven't reread it since college. I'm going to quote the Encyclopedia Britannica, also a very deep source, right? But quote, philosophers are both morally and intellectually suited to rule, said Plato. Morally, because it is in their nature to love truth and learning so much that they're free from the greed and lust that tempts others to abuse power. And intellectually, they're suited, because they alone can gain full knowledge of reality, which in the Republic is supposed to be the knowledge as the understanding of beauty, of virtue, and above all, the good. So in Plato's estimation, you know, you can have your own opinion about whether they're immune to lust and greed, but in his estimation, because they're after this notion of the good and virtue and beauty, philosophers will use their knowledge of these things to help other citizens achieve them as far as possible. Plato proposed that it could be philosophers who become queen, or conversely, maybe queens could learn philosophy and then use that as a guiding principle. Could go either way, come at it from either direction, but the combination of the philosophy as part of the ruler's operating MO would be the key. So I'm very interested to see how having a philosopher on stage will influence others. Right from the beginning, I've just said, man, I want that woman on the stage, right? To see how it will influence the conversation, how it will influence the framing of things, how it will bring this truth with a capital T right into the middle of the conversation. So that maybe we get our politicians to using Plato's definition, be more philosophical, i.e. to act from a place of a full knowledge of reality. So Plato's purpose in this exercise of creating a republic wasn't about politics, right? It was ultimately creating a republic, a model of what a republic would be with ruling and dealing with this and that, as a model of how to order our own soul, how we live in ourselves. Fascinating stuff. And this is where I'd like to leave us, to remember that the cycles of life are the nature of nature. We participate because part of us is just as much that nature. We like to think of ourselves as somehow outside of nature, but we're just nature with an awareness that lets us either see it for what it is or get sucked into it and just be governed by it. So the ideal, not from Plato now, but from yoga, comes really from the Bhagavad Gita's teachings that we are completely engaged in what is in front of us. We find a right relationship with our circumstances, and that's in Sanskrit called dharma, and we do the dharma without being attached to a notion of I'm the doer, I'm the one who deserves the fruits of all of my actions, but rather to simply do and to let go, to be unattached. Enjoy it, maybe have emotions around it, but ultimately to become in just a neutral relationship. The Gita goes to quite an extreme about this. It says, when you've achieved the right relationship with things and are unattached, a clod of dirt and gold are the same. Because ultimately, this play of life that we're engaged in has us all in a role, has us all dealing with things. We gain stuff, we lose stuff. But in any enduring way, what's long-term in us is the soul, the Atman, the consciousness and the unbound form of that, where we're all one. Part of us is the philosopher king, right? The philosopher queen who strives to understand the reality and to let our lives be uplifted through that knowing. May your days and nights be full of light. Hari Om Tat Sat. Namaste. I'll be back next week with an interview. Until then, take care. That's today's episode. Thanks a lot for listening to Peter's podcast. I hope that you find real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living through your practice. Please support me on Patreon, rate the podcast, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.